Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier and longer through the way you eat, move, think, and recover. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician, scientist, and lifestyle medicine pioneer with over 25 years of experience in patient-centered clinical care. In today's episode, we're going to take a deep dive into longevity science with one of the most trusted authorities in medicine, Dr. Michael Greger. A founding member and fellow of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, Dr. Michael Greger is a physician and internationally recognized speaker on nutrition. His science-based nonprofit, NutritionFacts.org, offers a free online portal hosting more than 2,000 videos and articles on myriad health topics. Dr. Greger is a sought-after lecturer and has presented at conference on world affairs and the World Bank, testified before Congress, and was invited as an expert witness in Oprah Winfrey's defense in the infamous meat defamation trial. A graduate of Cornell University School of Agriculture and Tufts University School of Medicine, Dr. Greger is also an acclaimed author. How Not to Die and How Not to Die Cookbook and How Not to Diet became instant New York Times bestsellers. More than a million copies of How Not to Die have been sold. All proceeds Dr. Greger receives from the sales of his books and speaking honoraria are donated directly to charity. Dr. Greger, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I love talking to you about How Not to Die and How Not to Diet on this podcast. And I've loved hearing you speak about them at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine conferences. So I'm delighted to have you back to talk about aging.
Let's do it.
Excellent. So I want to first call out something about your latest book. How Not to Age has 8,360 references. Is that a record?
It is, certainly for me. I think the How Not to Die had maybe 2,000, 3,000, How Not to Die had 5,000. And this actually ended up with 13,000 citations, over 1,200 pages, but the publisher wouldn't let me publish it. It was too big. So I had to cut it down by putting a lot of the material online. So I made over 100 special videos. So it's 13,000 citations worth of material, though only 8,000 actually made it into the book.
Amazing. What was the process like of gathering all those references and putting them together in the final product of the book?
It took me years. We have a staff of 19. We just hired two nutrition PhDs. We just have a whole team churning through tens of thousands of papers to pull out, you know, the most actionable, the most interesting, most groundbreaking pieces of science that can help people live longer, better lives.
Yeah. And speaking about that, so since 2013, there's, of course, this landmark study about the hallmarks of aging. And I think that's given us a bit of a blueprint on some of the mechanisms behind the process of aging. And I wanted to ask you how you thought that these pathways are changing our approach to aging.
Absolutely. So actually, this is was based off of a famous paper, The Hallmarks of Cancer. So basically, using the same kind of platform to talk about the various pathways of aging, all of which I cover in part one of the book, talking about natural dietary and lifestyle approaches to slow all the 11 pathways of aging, which I distilled down from all the hallmarks.
And I want to talk about a few of them because some of them may be pathways that people haven't heard much about. You know, some of them I think people are more familiar with. I think inflammation, for example, oxidative stress, people are more familiar with those. Some of the others, like the AMPK pathway, cellular senescence, I think are less familiar. Can you speak a little bit more about them?
Sure. The discovery of the anti-aging enzyme AMPK is considered one of the greatest biomedical breakthroughs in the last few decades. It's an energy sensor, so it's activated when we eat less or move more, although there are some dietary components like saturated fat that can suppress AMPK, whereas others like fiber can boost it. There's also specific AMPK activating compounds in barberries and black cumin and hibiscus tea and vinegar. So to help boost this anti-aging pathway, I encourage readers to consider at each meal reducing their consumption of saturated fats, which is really concentrated in meat, dairy, and desserts, increasing their consumption of fiber, which is really concentrated in legumes, beans, split peas, chickpeas, and lentils, and whole grains, and then taking each of the following: 2 teaspoons of barberries, a dash, just like a 1/12 of a teaspoon of ground black cumin, 3/4 of a cup of hibiscus tea mixed with 1/4 cup of lemon verbena tea, and 2 teaspoons of vinegar, though we should never take vinegar straight. We can sprinkle it on food or just dilute it in tea.
Amazing, Seth. That sounds like very actionable things that we can all be doing. And how about some of the other pathways like cellular senescence?
Yeah, cellular senescence, or the accumulation of so-called zombie cells, is considered one of the foundational hallmarks of aging. You know, most of our cells can only divide about 50 times before kind of stalling out, at which point they secrete inflammatory compounds to signal to the immune system to come clear them out. Unfortunately, our ability to remove them declines with age, so our tissues become littered with them. Thankfully, we can help prevent premature senescence by averting oxidative DNA damage and potentially help clear them by eating naturally senolytic compounds in foods. These are compounds that can kill off these inflammatory spewing senescent cells. Quercetin, fisetin, and piperlongumine. So to help slow this aging pathway, I encourage readers to consider on a daily basis consuming quercetin-rich foods, beverages, and seasonings such as onions, apples, kale, tea, and salt-free capers, which is kind of a Mediterranean herb, as well as eating fresh, frozen, or freeze-dried strawberries as a source of the purported senolytic compound fisetin, and then seasoning meals with something called papali, or long pepper, which is the source of this senolytic compound piperlongumine.
Mm-hmm. I love how there are so many things that are just everyday things that we can be doing that can make such a difference in the process of aging.
That's the whole point of the book, is to come out with everything that's ever really been put to the test.
Yeah, and autophagy has gotten a lot of attention, I think, because a lot of people have started intermittent fasting. What are your recommendations around autophagy?
Yeah, so autophagy is considered the primary system for cleaning the body from the inside out, clearing away accumulated cellular debris that may play a role in the aging process. There are some food components that can suppress autophagy, like acrylamide, which is found concentrated in French fries and potato chips, whereas others like spermidine and the antioxidant chlorogenic acid in coffee can help our cells kind of take out the trash. Unfortunately, intermittent fasting just doesn't work because it takes a few days to actually ramp up autophagy in human beings, unlike in rodents, which really is too long to go without medical supervision. But I do encourage readers on a daily basis to kind of boost this anti-aging pathway. 60 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic activity every day, like brisk walking. 20 minutes fails to move the needle, but you can do muscle biopsies before and after 60 and see a boost in autophagy. We should minimize our intake of French fries and potato chips, and then try to consume at least 20 milligrams of spermidine by incorporating foods such as tempeh, mushrooms, peas, and wheat germ into your diet, as well as drinking 3 cups of regular or decaffeinated coffee a day.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I've loved hearing you mention on a prior podcast in our conversation is when you go into writing these books that you are kind of a blank slate and you let the research take you where it's going to take you and arrive at the conclusions and recommendations that you end up making. In this case, it's really around how to live longer, borrowing from different cultures, from all the research that you've done. And I know in this book, you've put that together into some recommendations, including your wonderful Anti-Aging 8. What are things that we can be doing that would help us live longer?
You know, based on studies of identical twins, only about 25% of the difference in lifespan between people is due to genetics. So for what we can do over the majority, which we may have some control, we can look to the blue zones, these areas of exceptional longevity around the world, where more than 150 dietary surveys suggest we should center our diets around whole plant foods. So minimizing processed foods, meat, dairy, sugar, eggs, and salt, while maximizing fruits and vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices, basically real food that grows out of the ground, these are our healthiest choices.
And how about the role of other lifestyle factors?
Yeah, I talk about all the various lifestyle factors. not smoking, not being obese, regular exercise, healthier diet, adequate sleep, stress management. You know, more than a decade of healthy years may lie in the balance based on these simple healthy habits, even starting in midlife. So it's never too late. It's never too late to stop smoking, never too late to start moving, never too late to start eating healthier.
I want to touch on not just how not to age, but how not to anti-age, because there's so much out there about longevity. I think there's obviously a lot of interest, but it's also spurred an industry of maybe some commercial entities that are offering a lot of products to help people live longer. So I wanted to kind of run some of them by you because I know you've put so much research into kind of deciphering what truly does move the needle. I want to start with just supplements. Like, let's just start with vitamins because that's one bucket of supplements a lot of people take. What are your thoughts about people taking vitamins?
Oh, well, there's lots of different vitamins that can be used for lots of different reasons. I talked about kind of the disappointing new research on vitamin D. Prior meta-analyses have found that those randomized to vitamin D supplementation versus placebo actually had decreased all-cause mortality, meaning they live, on average, a longer life. But we have some recent massive trials that just came out that really kind of moved the needle more towards the null, suggesting that there is no difference in all-cause mortality in those of randomized to vitamin D3. However, it does appear to decrease cancer mortality, but unfortunately, because it does nothing for cardiovascular disease, it doesn't move the needle overall. However, if you have low risk of heart disease because you're eating a healthy diet, like a plant-based diet proven by Dr. Dean Ornish back in the 1990s to reverse heart disease, open up our arteries without drugs, without surgery, just a healthy plant-based diet and lifestyle program, if you are controlling your cardiovascular risk factors, then presumably your leading cause of death will be cancer, in which case vitamin D may actually move the needle for all-cause mortality, yet we don't know that from the literature.
Yeah, but it certainly would have potentially a role in falls, right? And that's one of the biggest concerns that can increase risk of mortality.
Well, so it depends on how you take it. So these mega doses where they dose people every year, every 6 months, or every 3 months, have actually increased falls risk. Now, some will argue, well, they just feel so much better. All of a sudden, they're moving around more and fall. But yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword in terms of fall. The most important thing to reduce fall risk is lower limb strengthening and balance exercises, there's 7 randomized controlled trials found that you can cut falls risk nearly in half by doing so. And that's just during the trial. And one trial 5 years after the one-year trial ended, those who had previously been randomized to the combined strength and balance group suffered 74% fewer fractures. I mean, that's vastly more effective than anything else we have out there, any of the bisphosphonate drugs, etc. 85% of age-related fracture risk, nothing to do with bone mineral density. It's really falls are what's breaking most of our bones. And so reducing fall risk is the most critical factor when it comes to reducing fracture risk.
Mm-hmm. And how about other vitamins? Like, there's a lot of interest in antioxidants, just kind of general thought process. People consider, you know, it's marketed. If you're getting older, you may need to take a supplement because your body's changing. What do you think about that line of thinking?
I mean, I encourage people to eat antioxidant-rich foods, but those randomized to some antioxidants, like beta-carotene, actually suffered significantly shorter lives. Same thing with vitamin A, same thing with vitamin E. So one, we really should try to get our nutrition from the produce aisle rather than the supplement aisle whenever possible.
And that brings me to my next question. So there's also a large industry of supplements that take fruits and vegetables and condense them into a super pill or a super shake. You're already shaking your head. I can anticipate what you want to say, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
The ones I know about are all multi-level marketing companies. You'd never buy anything from a multi-level marketing company. And, I mean, there are scams. In fact, a number of them have been, you know, accused by the FTC of deceptive advertising. And think about it. I mean, freeze-drying. So, I mean, you know, freeze a vegetable about 90% water. You can shrink it 10 times. But if you take a pill containing fruits and vegetables, all you're eating is 10 times out of fruits and vegetables. It's just like a tablespoon of fruits and vegetables. How about eating fruits and vegetables? It's cheaper, it's healthier, and you don't have to worry about what other crap they're putting in those pills. And they've been accused of hiding all sorts of things and cases of liver toxicity for like these Juice Plus supplements. So, I mean, it's a marketing scam. But, I mean, it's based on the idea that fruits and vegetables are so good for you, which is true. So, eat fruits and vegetables. The problem is no one can make any money selling fruits and vegetables because they go bad. They're perishable. They rot on the shelves. They aren't branded products. So, even like someone selling sweet potatoes is not going to put an ad on the Super Bowl for sweet potatoes because they'll just buy their competitor's sweet potatoes. I mean, it's just the whole system is set up to sell junk, to sell snack cake that sits on the shelf for a few weeks or carbonated brown sugar water or whatever it is, and it's all profit. There's just lots of money to be made, but these companies may not have our family's best interests at heart. And, you know, that's really why I wrote this book, to cut through all the nutritional noise and nonsense there. You know, it really reminded me my last book on weight loss. Both dieting and anti-aging are these multi-billion dollar industries. With so much money in the mix, anyone seeking even kind of basic practical advice in either arena, living longer or lighter, is just faced with an inscrutable barrage of pills and potions. I mean, even as a physician with the luxury of wading neck deep through the medical journals, it was a challenge to tease out facts from farce. And look, if it took me 3 years to sift through all the science, I'm afraid the casual observer just has no chance. But the good news is that it turns out we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity, and that the vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a healthy enough diet and lifestyle.
And some of the pathways, these hallmarks of aging pathways, can also be turned on by some supplements and medications that have gotten interest. And one in particular I'm thinking of is metformin. A lot of questions about metformin for longevity, again, stimulating the AMPK pathway and other mechanisms, some of which we don't even know how it may work or contribute to longevity. But what are your thoughts about metformin?
Yeah, so metformin is an AMP-boosting calorie restriction mimetic used as a diabetes drug. Remarkably, diabetics placed on metformin go on to live longer lives than if they had never gotten diabetes in the first place. So from a longevity standpoint, it's as if the diabetes diagnoses were beneficial because then they had access to this lifespan-enhancing drug. So look, if metformin is so powerful, then to more than offset this dreaded disease known as diabetes, should everybody be taking it? And the answer is no. First of all, because it kills about 167,000 users every year from lactic acidosis and undermines physical fitness and muscle gains because that's how it works. It's this mild mitochondrial poison. And it only seems to help those who are metabolically compromised with a disease like diabetes. In non-diabetic individuals without a genetic predisposition, metformin seems to make things worse, even among obese individuals. So it is not something we should take if we don't have diabetes.
And how about NAD plus?
So we can't actually take NAD plus. There's a number of NAD boosters on the market. So I have a whole chapter on NAD. It's an enzyme cofactor used by hundreds of enzymes in the body, including the purported anti-aging properties of sirtuins. There's these supplement hawkers, you know, try to argue that NAD levels, you know, reliably decline with age, and so we need to kind of boost them. It's not even clear that NAD levels do actually decline in most tissues in human beings, but there's basically four main NAD boosting supplements on the market. There's NA, NAM, NR, NMN, but there's a whole alphabet soup: NA, NMN, NAD, NADH, NMNH, NRH, tryptophan. I mean, I can go through each of them. I'm happy to talk about the pros and cons, but basically, in short, NR has been demonstrated to be relatively safe but not effective, and neither safety nor efficacy has been demonstrated for NMN. Just blindly overloading the system with NAD precursors does not seem to work in human beings, doesn't actually raise tissue levels, unlike in rodents. So the body just seems too smart. The human body seems too smart to allow the blunt incursion to affect tissue levels. So they're really, I think these supplements are really more profit-making distractions for more natural approaches. And there are ways to naturally boost NAD, something that's never been shown for supplements in people without the kind of specific muscle mitochondrial genetic defects. So broadly, there's three ways to increase NAD levels. We can increase the supply of NAD precursors. That's just one of them. The other two are having the body make more. There's an enzyme called NAMPT that actually makes NAD in the body. We can also have the body use less by inhibiting excess NAD degradation through two NAD-consuming enzymes, CD38 and PARP1. So how do we boost NAMPT? Exercise. How do we suppress the excess NAD consumption, decreasing inflammation and oxidation?
And you just mentioned so beautifully that the body is just so smart and brilliant that, you know, the foundational things that it needs are really where the money is, no pun intended, despite all these supplements. But there's so much out there in terms of even deciphering the lifestyle within exercise. There's so much nuance into what's the optimal regimen for longevity. You'd mentioned 60 minutes if we want to increase AMPK pathway or the autophagy pathways. What is, in a typical week, if we wanted to implement the best exercise regimen, taking into account autophagy and NAD boosting and all the different things that we want to optimize, what would that look like?
Well, the evidence supporting the overall benefits of exercise is absolutely overwhelming. The evidence in terms of life extension is actually surprisingly still a matter of debate. And we know physical activity can improve muscle mass and strength, balance, mobility, decreasing risk of falls, minimizing bone loss. And, you know, that's just beginning. Improving cognition and mood and depression and improving artery function, erectile function, you know, insulin resistance, overall quality of life, et cetera, et cetera. And so you have observational studies showing those walking in as little as 15 minutes a day, that's just 4,400 steps a day, associated with lower risk of premature death, with a maximum power benefit of walking around 90 minutes a day or jogging or any other vigorous activity for 45 minutes a day. But again, causality has yet to be definitively established. And so it's a combination of both aerobic exercise, strength training, and balance training and stretching exercises are recommended. And I talk about how, yes, you know, you can overdo it, but of the two, compared to the 2% that overdo exercise, the vast majority just aren't getting enough. And so the important thing is any exercise is better than none at all.
Mm-hmm. You know, for your other books, you'd had The Daily Dozen. Is there an analogous Daily Dozen for longevity?
Well, so that's where the kind of anti-aging eight kind of came about, which is kind of a, you know, an actionable checklist to complement the Daily Dozen, highlighting specific foods like, you know, nuts, greens, and berries have potential to offer really some of the best opportunities to slow aging and improve longevity.
Well, Dr. Greger, is there anything you want to share that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
Oh my God, so much juicy stuff everywhere. I mean, we have just absolutely scratched the surface. I think perhaps one of the most really surprising things that I ran into was the protein restriction. When it comes to protein and aging, less may actually be more, reducing protein intake, meaning restricting protein intake down to recommended levels, 0.8 grams per healthy kilogram body weight. It's the only thing that I could find that helped block all 11 of the aging pathways, boosting NAD, improving immunity, decreasing oxidative stress, inflammation, insulin resistance, as well as the cancer-promoting growth hormone IGF-1. Surprisingly, there's actually no benefit to adding extra protein to the diets of older men and women in terms of muscle mass, muscle strength, or physical performance. Instead, the excess protein most Americans get cause a drop in the pro-longevity hormone FGF21, a drop in testosterone, a worsening of the age-accelerating enzyme mTOR. So we should stick to the recommended level of protein, which comes out to be about 45 grams a day for the average height woman and 55 a day for the average height man.
And how about with aging and men and women who are over 65?
So over 65, I'd bump that to 1.0. That's still protein restriction from what most Americans get, which can be as high as 1.3 for certain age groups.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Greger, thank you so much for your time. This is just a wonderful addition to all the other books that you have put out there. And I think myself and a lot of physicians and our patients really enjoy just getting the synthesis of all the hard work that you put into every one of these books.
Thank you so much. Keep up the good work yourself.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.